Well, here we are again. Today, this is Bob Brundage again. Today, I'm in Newtown, Connecticut, right near Danbury. And the date is November the 14th. Today, we're talking to Chip Hendrickson, a gentleman who's been around and involved in club dancing for a while, and then reverted back to his old love of folk dancing and so forth. And we're anxious to hear from Chip. So, Chip, tell us a little bit about what life was like before you got into square dancing, and then how you got in and who influenced you in one thing or another. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I lived in a small town called Oceanside on Long Island.
All right.
That's where I grew up, really.
Yeah.
And I wound up out there because of World War II. And I was in Brooklyn with my mother and brother. They were afraid that Brooklyn Navy Yard would be bombed, so we went out to Oceanside, and I lived out there. And in 1945, I started dancing and following Native American ways, culture, and dance in 1945, and I still dance. In fact, the day after tomorrow, I'll be teaching it at a thing with Cub Scouts. But anyway, and I got involved as a teenager because I went dancing with various teen friends and their parents. One of whom was a folk dance leader, whose face I can see but can't remember her name. And I met we used to dance a lot, and one of the callers was named Al Lehman, and Al did one night stands, which we all went to, but they were fun.
Right.
And I watched what he was doing, and I got hooked. And he encouraged me, and I bought a couple of 78s, because that's the only thing they stole. And just started to learn to call, and I talked to him. He was really very patient.
Yeah, I remember that name.
Al Lehman, oh yeah, he was a wonderful man, but he had it figured out, and he had no up with any of the organized dances, which by today's standards were just almost like one night stands. They'd be right and left moves and chains and things, but he had nothing to do with that. All he did was church dances and things like that. Well, one day we went, and I can see some of the people. There was Al and his little three-piece band, and there was two other couples there, and their names are right this second, I can't remember, and Elaine and I. It was exactly a square. Nobody from the VFW came. It was in Limburg. Nobody came. So he said to me, would you like to call that dance? And it was Old Fall River Line, Paul Hunt's Old Fall River Line.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I said, I was petrified, but I did it. And I went over and I told the band, and of course they all, the four square dancers knew, the four couples knew the dance. And I'm standing there and nothing's happening. And nothing's happening. And Al finally walks over to the fiddler and comes back to me. I was supposed to say, honor your partner and honor your corner, but on the record it just had a da, 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 and I'm waiting for them to start.
Okay, right.
So that was the first time I called, and I was petrified. And then he gave me a dance in the Catskill, and I went with an old 38 Dodge we had that had no first gear. And it was down in a little hollow, and it was some kind of band and hay all over the floor. It wasn't really a square dance band, but I got through it.
Yeah.
And that was my first paid gig, and I don't remember the date. And that started it.
Yeah.
And your brother Al gave me my first club dance, out of town club dancing at the Hartford Club.
Okay.
But I don't remember the year. But in the meantime, I met a guy named Bill Kastner, and he was actually the first one to point out phrase calling to me.
Okay.
Believe it or not.
Yeah.
And he was a master of it, although
he really was.
A lot of people didn't realize that's why he was so smooth.
Yeah.
I watched his performing group in 67 in Philadelphia, and they would raise the routine to a record, and the record ran out, and he put the record back, picked up the phrase, the dancers did a hop skip, and they were in phrase again, and I was like, yeah, professional. But the real mentor was Ed Gilmore.
Sure.
I met Ed, and I sat up with him for wee hours many, many times, and he and Drew also were such a help. He was so giving. And I can remember one time I made a tape of myself calling Patterclaw, and I played a little for him. I said, you know, dreading what he's going to say. And he just very matter-of-factly said, it's very boring. And he was right. And then he showed me that I was going down, da down, da down, da down, da down, da down, da down. And he said, down, da da da. Raise your voice and lower your voice. Because, you know, he couldn't sing.
Yeah.
Go listen to a singing book. He never sang, but he was a musician and he recorded.
Right.
And I told this to somebody. He said, what? He said, listen to him. He doesn't sing. He gets you to sing, huh?
Yeah. Right.
He was a master of it. He taught me so much, but actually taught me almost as much about life, because he told me in terms of being a caller, he used to say, be analytical. And he says, don't just analyze the good callers that you like. He says, analyze what you don't like so you won't do it.
Yeah.
And I spent a long time watching different callers, and I'd steal a little from Bruce Jones. You know, I mean, that's how you learn.
Right.
You borrow from this and you borrow from that, but it was because Ed said, be analytical.
Yeah.
And I watched him like a hawk, and he was a master. And he predicted the downfall, and he warned about the levels, and he warned about it. He said, don't categorize people. But, you know, and then he got seriously ill and died. And he didn't write down enough. He should have written down more, because he had so much wisdom. But again, he was a philosopher. I mean, he was looking at more than dance.
Right.
And
right.
He's the one that coined Koso to drill with women. And I still have his and Drew's jiu-jitsu for dancers.
Oh.
I have it somewhere, and I could if I find it, I will send it to you. It always ended with smile sweetly.
Huh.
It's for the ladies. It's judo for the ladies, because women, as usual, are those ones getting yanked around as they are in contra dancing
right.
today. But I can remember the floating Alaman 1-2-3 kick.
Yes, right.
Well, he said, if you're getting your arm, their combat to that was give.
Yeah.
And then smile sweetly and help him up the floor. You know, with things like that. But it was humor to teach, and I somewhere I've got that.
I don't know if you ever heard, and I don't know if I ever put it on tape, and it just occurred to me, and it's a good time to put it in. He said, he used to teach round dancing, and he said, mm-hmm. you know, we do a step-close step, that's a two-step, and you see, we do a step-step close, and now we've got a waltz. And he says, I've devised a new system. He said, you start with your feet apart, and you go a close step-step.
He did that?
Yeah.
I heard that story somewhere, but I know it was him, but it sounds like something he'd do.
Right.
Because he was so impassive when he called. The only thing that moved was his toe.
Yeah.
But his eyes sparkled. He loved what he did.
I know.
He was way ahead on sound.
Yeah.
And he was ahead of his time. He was just marvelous. His records. Remember when he came out with the Boom Chuck records?
Sure.
Turned the square dance world upside down.
Boom Chuck Boys.
But those were accompaniment records to make the recording sound like there was a band there instead of thin music.
Right.
And then he got in with the Mel Hinky Jazz Trio, which is the latest series. And on one of the recordings, you can hear a tink, tink, tink in the background. And I asked him what it was. He said the bass player took the monitor and turned it like that, and that was the beep in the little speaker coming out, and they decided to leave it in.
I'll be darned.
But those recordings of the Mel Hinky Trio are done so many times through and then doubled, because he said they couldn't play that kind of music too long.
Yeah.
But he did that, and they were true accompaniment records. I mean, and every time he came out with a singing call, it was a hit, because all the dancers were fit.
Yeah.
And he's the one that taught me. I remember one time saying, oh, a new record came out, you know, I was looking at sets in order, looking at the figures and everything. And he said, it isn't any good. And I said, well, have you tried it? And he said, no, but it isn't any good. I said, how do you know? And then I get the lesson. He starts going down the figures. He's writing numbers, number of steps.
Yeah.
And he said, this comes out to 74. He said, that's so many more beats than 64.
Yeah.
He said, you got 10 more steps you got to fit in there. And he said, the dancers are going to be running. And he showed me another one, and it would be 62 or 66. He says, a couple of beats either way. And, you know, it worked.
Sure.
And after a while, I used to do the same thing. And I just said, I'm not going to use that one. You know, if the music was good, I'd buy it and get another dance to it. But he taught me that, and he was positive. He was right.
Right.
Because that's all got lost. Now it's just run. Well, remember Grand and Top, they came out with so-called phraseless records?
Yeah.
Which really weren't. I mean, you can't do that and have Western culture music.
Right.
You know, but anyway. And so Ed was really my major force. There was a guy named Bill Janek who taught me about sound and taught me how to solder and things. He was a caller on my own. And that was a help, because I did all my own repairs. That's where I learned about phasing of speakers, which helps.
Yeah.
Still does, although it's not so important anymore because halls are better. I belong to the Long Island Callers Association eventually. Initially, I was turned down because I didn't have enough experience, even though I had one of the biggest dancers in the area, and it took somebody older than me. And by the way, how you treat people has a great effect on life. You've got to be real careful what you do, because here I was going for this club once a month. I had a big crowd. I was popular. Here's another guy who's calling no longer than I was, and I was actually always have been a better caller than him in a lot of ways, but that's neither here nor there. Nice guy. We took him in because he was older, about 10 years older than since the past time. He wouldn't take me. And I was so mad. I wore Western clothes. I didn't say do-si-do. I said do-sa-do. And that, I helped push club dancing into Long Island and crushed the other. But that wasn't my objective. My objective was to distance myself. And then eventually they were asking me to join when I was famous up and down the East Coast. Be right. Careful how you treat people, because you may get the wrong reaction. I was just a pig-headed kid then.
Right, right.
But I was really ticked off, and I still feel to this day I was right.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and I know who did it, but it's all past, but that's what happened. And so I came up here and joined the Connecticut Callers Association. I never got into Caller Lab because you had to attend the convention.
Yeah.
And at the time, I was out of work. I was raising five kids. I couldn't afford it. And even though I had four or five clubs and making records, I couldn't go. And I resented it so that when I could afford it, I wouldn't go.
Yeah.
I just resented that. It just really bugged me. So I never bought it. And I joined American Callers Association. Oh, I didn't this year, only for the insurance.
Yeah.
Because I'm covered. And also for the ASCAP BMI.
Right.
Although I very rarely ever use it. I mean, I'll do dance after dance. It's all Irish, Scottish, all public domain. Occasionally I want to do a singing call. And just to cover my tail, I get it, you know. But they're not really interested in little guys like me, because I don't do it that often. Never went to a training school, really. Well, I spent a week out in Wisconsin with Gilmore, I think your brother, and Anita Manning-Smith.
Yeah, right. They did a lot of things together.
On the lake out there with the camp.
Okay.
But it was really, everybody who came was callers, I think, but maybe two or three oddballs. So you had egos and...
Yeah.
Fun. It was funny, but it was that was a training school. But I listened to them when they were up at the Hotel Thayer. I Ed, any time I could get him, plus many of the 3 and 4 in the morning, talking to him and
right.
picking his brains. And of course,
right.
he loved coffee.
And cigarettes.
And unfortunately, cigarettes are what killed him. But
sure.
But I knew this, and when we went and danced to him, I always brought a thermos for him. You know, and he kid me about, oh, it's about time or something.
Yeah, right.
And I made him when he stayed with us, I made him a card, and I might have a copy, NOOFs, N-O-O-F, National Order of Freeloaders. And I made it up, I only ever made one, and it was for him, and on the back it had special requirements, and one of them was plenty of hot coffee at all times. And I laminated and I gave it to him, because they used to stay with us on Long Island. And he told me some months later that he was at somewhere and there was no coffee. He says, I'm dying. And he says, I'm too polite to ask. So he says, oh, Chip Henderson made me this card. And he showed it around, and all of a sudden the hostess went, oh, and that. He said, I got my coffee. So he thanked me for it. He says he used it since. But somewhere I even have that. And it was all hand Leroy lettering then. I didn't have a typesetter. My hobbies have always been reading. And I used to do model railroading. I don't consider Native American a hobby. It's a lifestyle.
Yeah.
I mean, we're that fact right behind you is that right behind your head is a jingle dress.
Yeah, I've seen you.
Yeah, and that's hers. It's right off the corner.
Yeah.
And as you brush into it, you'll hear it jingle. And we've got, as I said, we'll be teaching Saturday morning Cup Scouts, and then there'll be a powwow in the afternoon. We'll all dress up to the nines and we'll dance. And
right.
there'll be part blood, half blood, no blood, and full blood. My Lakota film might be there. So
mm-hmm.
I don't call that a hobby. It's just a way of living. And and that actually is probably the only dance form that I'm in that is a dance for its own, it's a dance for a getting together sake. It's not, oh, let's learn Indian dancing. We dance because we meet and it's good, this is a good thing to do, which is what all the dancing used to be, and this is what Western square dancing has lost, and right now country Western has. They have this extended community.
Mm-hmm.
And square dancing, friendship is square dancing's greatest reward, you know that.
But yes.
That's nice. Bowling, country western, ballroom, Native American, any activity where people get together is the friendship. So throwing that out and feeling good about it is not going to get you more dancers. That's not going to solve the problem.
Yeah.
And I'm not knocking it, but it's any activity where humans come together. It's,
right.
it's what brings people together. But then the activity is... can't be divisive. I mean, club dancing, as I see it, is very divisive.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
Yes.
And it's partly due to lack of leadership. And I got in trouble lots of times because I refused to raise the level. Because
yeah.
I knew better, but they didn't respect my opinion. But what happens when they hire me back? But the people that like me voted by leaving and
right.
never saying anything. And when I called up, there's a club that danced in a circular hall, sort of, And I had 10.5 squares outside of Boston. At 9:30, the vice president, some of the officers weren't there. The vice president said, "This is remarkable." I said, "What?" You know, I'm looking around. He said, "Two couples having refreshments, open refreshments." I said, "So?" He said, "Well, 2 weeks ago, and I had a big name, and I knew who it was, and I won't say, we had 2.5 squares eating." Okay. And they had the same size crowd. Both of us had 10.5 squares, so I was drawing. Well, comes 10 o'clock, he says, "This is amazing." And I look around, and he says, "What?" He says, "One couple went home. His milkman's kicked up at 4 in the morning." I said, "So?" He says, 2 weeks ago, 2.5 squares were gone. I was never hired back.
Yeah.
Which means I pleased everybody.
But him.
Or whoever.
Yeah.
And what can you do? See, there are callers who are clever enough to play both sides of the fence. I'm just not that way. I just am not that way. So I one day said, "I don't enjoy this. I'm looking at my watch, and I quit." And I just walked away from it and had some misgivings, but it was, in the long run, was the smartest thing I ever did. What I did in my life, I was always a graphic artist or a technical illustrator, and that's why the book I showed you,
yes,
that's all that years of training.
Yeah.
I finally got a chance to be expressive on my own, and people who know graphics say I'm doing a good job, you know. But anyway, you wouldn't think I did that if you looked at it and say, "Oh, I must have paid somebody."
Right.
But that's a good-looking cover. But
sure.
I could tell you why, but that's another story. But that was what my background did for me.
Yeah.
And I've been a full-time caller off and on. I've had many as 4 or 5 clubs, and, you know, clubs fold, I get here. You know, things change.
Yeah.
And, well, Ed Ruddy, he called from Newington after I left. I just got tired of getting pushed.
Yeah, and he's still there.
Yeah, and he's still there. He does a good job, you know. And we're all happy, and we weren't happy at the time. First time I called, September 22nd, 1951, I told you, Lynbrook. Was paid dance, was Catskills. I've been caller, or sometimes paid, sometimes one that calls. You know, remember the Atlantic Convention, the old Mechanics Hall,
right,
and the building rock? And I remember Bruce Johnson standing there watching that 800 people doing Alamo style, practically in tears.
Yeah.
And he told me, he said, "We've lost that in California." And that's back in the 50s.
Yeah.
And he said, "Anytime I'm in the East, I call." That's when we used to do the full balance all the way, and the room would boom, oh yeah. And so I did them. That later became the New England Square Dance Festival,
right,
which I did call them off and on.
Yeah.
And I was at Louisville, Kentucky, which was one of the last times they had a lot of music.
Oh yeah.
Because I remember, what was the big heavy set guy from the Northwest Coast to Seattle? Jack, somebody, I had the band.
Jack Barber.
Jack Barber. He was there.
Yeah.
And the string bands from Texas were there. And
yeah.
Sleepy Marlin was there. Slim Sterling was there. Oh, yeah, you know, and I was one of the last live music dancers. It was kind of a shame when that went.
Right.
And I'm still amazed to this day that callers would use records and say, "I can't call for live music." What do they think is on the record?
Yeah.
It's a band!
Right.
And for years, and when I was a NECA specialist, and it just sort of faded out, Fran and I, she usually came on, had one, how to turn on a band.
Yeah.
And it was how to work with a band.
Right.
Dave Hoskamp,
sure,
which is why I've taken him to New York City, to Lincoln Center, where I do that big 2-hour beginner dance with 800 people, and you're on a stage 30 feet from the nearest dance, you have to teach verbally,
yeah,
with a live band. And
right.
Dave is one of the few who can do it. Dick Ledger came with me and did it once.
Yeah.
But I haven't used many in the Western field because there aren't many around. If you were still around, I could use you.
Right.
Because you know what phrasing is, and you also know how to keep it easy.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is, you know, Sleepy Marlin's Sally Gooden?
Yes.
I've had that recording, 40 years or so?
Yeah.
I still use it. I've taped it now. I still use it at one-night stands, and I still get all excited. I get into that thing, and I've heard it a thousand times.
A zillion times, right?
But they're advertising Carol Channing now. She's up at the Oakdale Theater, and she was interviewed some years ago on Broadway, and she was doing her 1,000th performance, and they asked her if she'd get bored. And she says, "Heavens no." She says, "When I do, I quit." And I can relate to her. Even,
sure.
See, again, I'm beyond dance. I can relate to that. I still get turned on by that tune.
Right.
I mean, he's probably dead and gone by now. Little guy. He was,
I remember, yeah.
Big cigars. But there's a life to that. And you get into the music. In fact, the one thing when I switched out of club dancing into traditional was I came home far less tired because I didn't have to emote,
right,
to create excitement. I just let the music.
Yeah.
And you know that music,
sure,
the English Irish, our backgrounds are all square dancing. People just, and I just sit there and grin and cue. and shut up when I can.
Yeah.
And so I get paid lots of money, and I don't have to. I can wear ordinary clothes. I don't have to impress anybody. No notes, no preparation. If I got a problem, I'll write the dance on the spot. Al Bozek does the same exact same thing.
Right.
He many times got in a situation. He just take out his pen, he writes a few notes, and he calls a phrase dance, and he adds it to the lexicon. You know, and I do singing calls, but I don't use the old traditional tunes like Darla Nellie Gray. I'll call Uptown and Downtown with Golden Slippers. I might call it to a singing called Medley the Grim put out.
Yeah.
Or something like that. I love Tom Paxson's Last Thing on My Mind. I'll do things like that.
Yeah.
Which is one of the reasons I want to stay with BMI and cover.
That's true. Yeah.
Just in case some guy walks in.
Yeah. I use Shindig in the Barn.
I still use that. That's on the back of my Sally. That's on the back of the tape of Sally Gooden. I love that thing. And that was remember that was a singing call. Everybody turned into whole. Great piece of music. Beautiful.
I think it was Ken Bauer.
Yeah, that's right. I don't even know what the dance was. I didn't care, but the music was so good. They made good music.
Yeah,
they made good dance music. And the other one of the highlights I just wrote down, friends, was all the neat people we met over the years of traveling. Because back in the earlier days, you always would put up in somebody's house.
Right.
Then the callers, this is what I was told, a lot of these big callers would prefer to be alone in a motel. And then the dancers lost that idea, and then people got busy, and then pretty soon I had to pay, so then you'd have to charge more or not make as much money, you know what I mean? But one of my real highlights, 67, was the Country Steppers exhibition team that I had out of Lion Squares, and we went to Philadelphia, and we did a 6 minute because I had an LP of hoedown music at Windsor when they made the 10-inch one. 6 minutes, I think it was Ida Red, but I don't remember. And we did a 6 minute routine with two squares, promenade in, two squares, went to a contra line, went back to two squares, went to a big square, went back to two squares, and we did Venus and Mars in there, and I don't remember. And I have all the notes, and I may resurrect it. And then they wind up into a circle, and then one couple at a time, they spin the lady and then kneel. And we brought down the house, sets in order, picked up and wrote on. We've been in existence 9 months, Bill Kastner's group 15 years. I mean, we were in the same line. Earl Johnson, Charlie Baldwin, they didn't know we had this.
Yeah.
They didn't know.
Right.
And we went around. Well, the other day, at Nomad, I met Vic and Ellie Knoll. Vic is crew cut, you know, straight man around the back. I said, Marine. What's a Marine? Always a Marine. I've got a friend in the Native American circles who's an ex-Marine. He's got a crew cut, a Marine flag, hangs off his safety pole.
Right.
You know, and I left. Oh, yeah. Vic and Ellie were in that group. And now, you know what they do now? They don't club dance. They don't square dance at all. They're in country western exhibition team.
Yeah.
And I said, I want to revive that someday at Nomad. And they said, we're here. And all I need is 16 phrase dancers, and I have the routine again.
Get Dick Forsher.
Oh, good old Dick, yeah. But it would require renting a hall.
Was he at Nomad this year? Probably.
I didn't see him, but that doesn't mean anything.
That's the last time I saw him, was at your Nomad Festival.
I don't know, at the S. Fran. You know, I mentioned all the highlights were all the long talks with Ed Gilmore, Bruce Johnson. Bruce Johnson and I in Richmond sat in hotel rooms, and God knows what hours, talking about dance. And we were talking always about the problem and how do we head it off.
Yeah.
But we, meaning him, because I'm not the only one, we were a minority. And at the time, all you needed was a record player and get some people, and you were a hero.
Yeah.
I mean, there was that guy from Long Island who, when he danced, at Cutman. Remember him?
Sure.
Yeah. Well, when he first came and danced to me, he couldn't dance.
Yeah.
I don't know if he can dance, but he certainly did well with what he did.
Yeah.
And I admire him for that, you know. But it just doesn't interest me, because I came from the school of dancing is it's not walking around on your heels. That's the way. That's what it's not. And remember, we used to have the shuffle.
Sure.
I can remember you and many other callers would turn the music down. You could hear it. Now you would hear heel, heel, heel. You wouldn't hear the shuffle anymore.
Right.
And it's all gone. But interesting, there was a caller over here in next town over who said, we were talking about something. He said, you know, I came in the 70s. I didn't see what you saw. He didn't see the 30 and 40 squares. He didn't see the barn. He didn't see the crowds that pulsed.
Yeah.
Because we were phrase dancing, even if some of the callers didn't know it.
Right.
And the dancers didn't know it, they just did it. And then when they got to be mishmash, that was the great change.
Right.
And of course now they have to deal with it. And then I was on Top Records for a while.
Right.
And most of them I liked, one or two I wish I didn't have done, but I think any caller will tell you that.
Probably.
You know, I mean, I'll just this is just some thoughts I wrote, some of which I said. I think we're through a peak wave of public involvement in the activity. And I think it's social and economic has changed it. And if you want to play the game, you're going to have to get out of being a dance teacher and study society. I stayed with a friend down in Maryland, now Southside, Virginia. I just did a 9:30 in the morning till 10:30 at night with lunch and supper break, 18th century, live music in the evening. And he's an anthropologist who studies, I found out, that's the study of human beings, et cetera, et cetera, and how they interact now and try and predict. And he's doing this as part of leadership for business. And he was saying that the changes that are going on today and the fact that in order to survive today, you have to be able to change. And, you know, in the past, well, my granddaddy lived this way and I lived this way and my kids were... That's gone. Fran brought home a book. What's common in business, 50 to 60 hour work week, it's already here with no more money. Middle management is going and the 45 year job is gone.
Yeah.
And I learned years ago in life there is no security, you know that. There's no security. I mean, so what? Fine, just get on with it and stop worrying about it. I mean, if your number's up and an air 747 is going to come through my house, there's nothing you can do about it. Right. Don't worry about it. I mean, be careful when you drive and all that. But, you know, so here we got all this change going on, and all that I see out of Caller Lab, I don't see much, or either one now, is they keep changing the list.
Yeah.
And one of the things I wrote in that piece I'll get to you is that I said, you can change the list all you want. You got to get back to basics. But what does that mean? That means gentle, get down. And like that thing in this folk dance thing here where he said, make it easy for beginners to get in. And make it exciting so people aren't bored, quote unquote. Now, boredom is self-induced, or it's an attitude, because what bores you might not bore me, and vice versa. So therefore, it isn't the dance.
Yeah.
It's the way you look at it. And I think that the dance teachers train this, and plus they pay homage to the hotshots, who are the only ones that tell them how great they are. You know what I mean? And plus, I think the callers get bored doing the same thing all the time.
Right.
But see, you mentioned Terry Golden earlier as an entertainer. I consider myself an entertainer when I go out to a dance. And the dance is my genre to do it. But I'm entertaining people. I get fathers and daughters smiling. I get them to go forward and back by teaching one, two, and a cha-cha-cha. And I always say, don't tell any other callers I'm using cha-cha-cha. But, you know, I'm telling... But 2 hours later, when I say forward and back, the old Virginia Realty Inn, they're all going one, two, boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
Which you can't get... Any other, but you can get club dancers to go forward back and easy. Concert dancers will.
Yeah.
But they've got their own little steps. And I just take the same handful of figures. Circle, Dosidos, Promenade, Sicilian, right and left hand stars, maybe a single file lead, chassés, or sachet, is what I call them now. That's all I use in 2 hours, and I just keep shuffling the figures and the music around, and you can fool a lot of people one time. You couldn't do it week after week. You'd have to have an arrangement, but I found some of my old square dance books, and I used to call certain dances figure dances, where Slim Sterling had one he called Looks Like L, and they were dances were like this, or the one where you got eight in a line, or two lines of four facing the same way. You have to learn the dance, you can't hash it.
Right.
And there's millions of those, they're beautiful dances.
Sure.
But the callers would rather, you know, just throw this stuff out, and I had written a New England Caller, actually published it. That's not the name of the magazine, but that's what I call
Northeast.
It. Yeah. Some guy from Caller Lab or something, he wrote about phrase calling. And I had to write a letter to them, and the letter was written to them to tell them that they had been printing three times. I had given three courses in their magazine in the 70s. And he said, nobody paid me attention.
Yeah. Right.
But I said, I just wanted to let you know that you actually did this. But in the course of it, I called the president. What callers are doing humbug.
Uh-huh.
I said, because what they do is somebody comes up with a new basic, and you know as well as I do, the first thing is, what is equal? Well, equals a right and left on a lady's chain. You can then plug that into a simple basic sequence, like head to the right, circle to a line, right and left through and back, and Alaman left. Well, you can plug in cast-offs and wheels and deals and swing throughs and slide throughs, and you can go on for 5 minutes, and you haven't done a damn thing but run people around a circle.
Right.
And if there's no joy in it, who cares, you see? So that's why I call it humbug. You know, and I said, I bet you could take Burleson's 5,000 calls and boil it down to probably 500 and then throw the rest away and then take the 500 and you probably could break them down into basics.
Sure.
Because if you look at French confidants or cotillions, I got diagrams upstairs from 1760. I mean, you think if diagramming is new and all this?
Yeah.
You want to see the stuff those people were doing. Well, I mean, complicated, and every single dance is on the money. It's the second round date. And that's how they dance. But they're complicated. But they were upper class. They had nothing better to do. And also stage dancing.
Right.
But if you think it's this complication is new. Mm-mm. Yeah, he doubles over 300 dances?
Yeah.
Oh, I'd love to do them, but I'd have to have an expert group of dancers and then nothing better. It'd take a half an hour to do one dance.
Yeah.
You know, but anyway, they did it. I think the activity... Oh, this phrase my wife uses all the time. Go see Dick and say hello to him.
So let's see, we just wanted to turn the tape over, and you were talking about one of Fran's favorite expressions.
Yeah, and I thought instead of, I'll just read this, because I had written this when I was thinking about it. We've been through the peak wave of public involvement in the activity. This because square dancing was relevant to American culture in years past. I don't think it is now. Unless someone, or someone's realized, the emperor has no clothes. This is Fran's always saying that. The same old platitudes and figureless shuffling will continue. The activity needs to be approached from social and philosophical attitudes and directions. Saying square dancing is fun is nice, but so what? Definition of fun is far too vague. Taking drugs is fun for some, beating people up for others. Instead of wishing and hoping the present country western fad would die, a look at what they're doing and why it works should be the approach. Also, what's not working with it. Besides, caging is something else may attract the public. Be careful what you wish for. In Newtown, approximately 400 people country western every Thursday night. The night before it's ballroom dancing. The 3.2 million people in Connecticut, less than 800, attended the last festival. Club callers I talk to don't think there's 3,000 dancers in the whole state anymore. I don't know, but that's what they tell me. Is square dancing the folk dancing of Connecticut? Not really. Remember, the emperor's clothes. This is true everywhere. The times, they are changing rapidly, and square dancing is back at the starting line now. And I wrote a little line here, but I'll tell you a story. Years ago, Earl Johnson, Dave Haas, and I rode up in Dave's Mercedes, because I remember it was a Mercedes, the first time I ever rode in one. We went up to the Mass line where there was a restaurant where Colas and I used to meet. I can't remember the name of the town. It begins with an A, I think. It's right on the Mass, Connecticut line. And we met Dick Ledger. You might ask him about this. Dick Ledger and Jim Mayo, and I think Dana Blood was the other caller.
Mm-hmm.
It was at least 20 years ago. At least. And we met, we had dinner on a Good Friday, and we had dinner. I don't even know who proposed this or why. And we had dinner, and after dinner, we went up in a little conference room, and we sat around and we talked, and nobody tasted it. And we talked about phrasing and timing and the problems of dance, better and how to change it, and one of us said something about the establishment, and Earl Johnson stopped us cold, and he said, guys, we're the establishment.
Yeah.
Dead silence. Dead silence for a minute, you know, not stunned, because, you know, you just go along, you don't realize who you are, if you are, you know, I mean, I'm just me, but anyway, it was Earl that said, either coming or going, the best thing, and this was 20-something years ago, Earl said this, and you can check with him. He said to me, basically, the best thing that could happen to square dancing would be for it to die completely so we could get it right the next time, or some words like that. And that was over 20 years ago.
Right.
And I agreed with him at the time, because you could see where it was going. But it, when something's going well, nobody wants to change it. And it's like with pollution and all the rest of it. Well, it's all right, don't worry. And then one day when the clouds come in and people are dying, well, then we better do something. And then all those people that were right, but, you know,
it's too late.
Yeah, well, it's like around here with the building. Right around, my daughter works in a school. 2 years ago, they built a wing on it. They run out of room. They're building houses in Sandy Hook, which is part of Newtown, like crazy. Who's going to pay for all of that? Not the taxes from the houses. Richfield just bonded $20-something million to block a golf course and ensuing homes, because they figured out it would be cheaper to do that than have to add wings to schools and hire teachers in the long run. And now it's, this is going to start, we're going to start to see this around the country, because You can't, I mean, I know the builder's got to make a living, but who's going to pay for it? We just got sewers here. We need them in this area. But I heard at the truck, the town plow drivers will not plow this road this winter unless they pave it. So we know it's going to be paved before freeze comes in. But I heard another part of town where they had 40-foot wide roads, they're cutting back 10 feet to make, you know, because the road only has to be 30 feet wide with curbs. So they have less snow to push because of the money and the time and the cost to keep building more roads. So it's not just dance, but I don't know. Gilmore was a philosopher, and I think you really have to look at the whole picture and not your own room there, dance world. I mean, that's my own opinion of the whole thing. And the only reason I know anything about club dancing is because I have several friends who are still in it, and we get together, and I just ask them what's going on. And the ones I trust, and none of them are wringing their hands or crying, but they'll all tell you flat out, it's not what it was. Right. You know, and you know, now, you know, I'm Bozek. And Al's been calling 25 or 30 years by now.
Yeah.
And he's just my age, and but he was a musician. He was a New England champion drummer in high school. New England, not Connecticut, New England. He still plays the bones, and he uses live music. He does father-daughter dances, and he does wine night dances, and he calls traditional and all that. So he's still got one club, but he used to have several, but they aren't around anymore. And, you know, and I was very pragmatic about the whole thing.
Yeah.
And he's got a place to go.
Yeah.
I mean, and he enjoys them. He enjoys the one-night stands as much as I do, because the joy of dance is there. And remember, club dancers would say, oh, that's not real dance. Sure the heck is. It's realer than what they're doing.
Yeah.
More real.
Right.
You know what I mean? And there's a real joy there.
Yeah.
And there is joy in club dancing, but it seems to depend on the caller. It's like in a different area around here about different churches. A church will boom, and it will always turn out to be the pastor, be it a he or a she. And if that person leaves, the church can fall back down. And so definitely there are callers like Ed Reddy and some of them. They hold the club together because they're nice people.
Yeah.
You know, and then the ones that aren't, and I could think a whole bunch of the names of so-called hotshots, whatever happened to.
Yeah.
They didn't make it because of their arrogance.
Yeah.
You know, and of course now people just won't put up with it. So basically that's where I've been. And what I do miss is the ability to go out on and do a dance and just call and not have to teach.
Yeah.
And at Nomad, I had an hour of squares in the main hall, and they put some experience required, and I was able to do, just walk through, you know, Swanee River, Lady Round the Lake, just walk through that once or twice, and then just call it. And that I liked, and there's a couple of dancers, I said, you can do this, and I just called it.
Yeah.
And they could, and but on faith. And I was talking to two callers, who asked me about what is going on. One from Pennsylvania. And I forget where the other one was from. And I said, what you heard is something that's dying. I said, when I go, and only a few of us do that. And I said, you realize that I was doing a pure quadrille. We shook the head, yes, because I'm cueing. I'm saying, hold your hand, I'll say circle left. And then I sing on the phrase. But those dancers would just push right into it. And I get high on a kite because it's going around. It's that pulse.
Right.
You know? And that was a joy because I got in eight dances in an hour and I didn't have to teach anything because I just did, you know, I'll just go right and left. I think I right and left through an old Stepney chain.
Yeah.
I called that one, you know, and then I called Swanee River because then they all sing.
And you
did
one the other night called Triple
Duck. Oh, yeah, I've occasionally done Triple Duck, go like turn on to the next, so forth. Yeah, sure. They're good. I call that a figure dance.
Yeah.
It's a set pattern to itself. I'll give you two more stories. One involves your brother and one involves Earl Johnson. But the point that was made, and I think I saw your brother do it first, that I remember, he was running a come over you down at the barn, the concert hut, and he had four different callers, and Earl was there, I was there, I came up from Long Island, so it was over 30 years ago. And it was an afternoon thing. He was doing a live music dance at night with the Pioneers, and people were going to pay to come for that. Well, comes the last caller, and I won't say who it is, I know who it was, and I remember what the caller did. Since they're only male callers, I'll be able to say he, and I'm not tipping anything. He decides to do Wagon Wheel Spin and Travel On.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody does that or doing that then. And then he proceeded to badly teach and badly call two dances. And the crowd was like, the teeth were grinding. And at this point, I turned around and Al was dancing in the back and he's coming through. You know, he's always smiling.
His face was dead serious, and I'm watching him. He jumps up on the stage and turns around, big grin. He says, "Let's do one more dance before we go." Puts on a record. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Well, everybody knows the damn dance, and he's got the tempo down, and he's radiating charm, and I could feel the room change.
Right.
Because he knew that half those people would have gone home.
Yeah.
And he brought it around, and he brought down the house, and they screamed, and they yelled, and they forgot the other guy.
Yeah.
And I saw that, I said, that's what Ed's telling me. The other one was Earl Johnson some years later at the Connecticut Call. It was Main Hall, 7 o'clock. The guy who was president of Connecticut Calls at the time was the programmer. Couldn't call then, can't call now. Doesn't even live in Connecticut, I don't think, but it doesn't matter. He's got 40 squares, he starts calling, Patatol. While we're gone, he's calling, "By through, pass through, start through." And I was still married to Elaine, that was over 20 years ago, and she says, "What happened?" I said, "Well, 3 calls behind and losing ground." Well, we got through that, and the single call was worse. And then there's 2 rounds, or 1 round, and then he has another tip for his part of the half hour, whatever. But he couldn't get in a bathroom. I said, "I gotta go to the bathroom." Everybody left. Well, some others came in, poor fuckers, they didn't know. Well, he proceeds to destroy 30 sets. And then, all of a sudden, the room is filled, and Earl comes up. And remember the old Boots Randolph sound, Yakety Sax?
Yeah.
Well, Top was copying that quite well, and it was, I don't remember the tone, I don't know what he did. He puts on one of those records, and he slows the tempo down, and he calls Circle Left, and he shuts up, and he do like heads to the right to a line, past the wheel, and do something simple. And the whole place started to pulse, and when he, this is his first number, not a hold on, same call. The place went off the wall, and he, you know, now he can walk on water. And that was the legend. And I knew what he was doing. The minute he started, I said, "I want to see what this guy's going to do." And it's exactly what he did. Earl knew what dancing really is. And turned somebody else's blunder into a great boost for him. Not only that, he saved the whole part of that evening, because a lot of people were pretty upset. No, I don't even know why.
Right.
They had no idea why. In fact, I remember I used to combat this. One of the last classes I took, Flight and Squares, I used to teach 2 classes. One, I used to do them Sunday nights and then Monday nights. But it got to be I didn't want to do Sundays anymore, be away from the family. So I used to take Monday and play it on Sunday. Then they would bring them together. I'd come and do the last Sunday before graduation. The guy used to ask me, "How come you're always talking to me?" And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, I make these mistakes and you're talking to me." I said, "Because the mistakes that are made are common. It's always like in square through going the wrong way." But anyway, what I did, I started to do, they told me that they were all going out and traveling to so-and-so caller, and I knew the caller. I don't remember the name, and if I did, I wouldn't tell you, but this caller was a nice person. I couldn't call, you know, cut time. Anyway, and I started calling the standard box 14, right and left through, die through, pass through, right and left through, die through, and you know, all that. And I did this both ways. And all of a sudden, I went into quick time, dive through, pass through, right now, and of course, the whole floor and got all messed up. And they're looking at me like I went out of my mind. And then I stopped and said, I said, "Now, you're going to go out dancing in the future. And if that happens, it might be the caller, not you." And I never mentioned any names. And I knew what was coming because they had shown me where they were going to be going. I said, "Why are you going there?" "Well, we got to go for the club policy." I said, "Well, you know." And then I know. Guy came back to me a month later and told me if I hadn't done that, he'd have quit dancing on the spot.
Yeah.
See, so I did save somebody because he told me, he said, I was so mad at that person. I said, "Wait a minute, Chip said that it could be the caller." And they stayed in dancing. So I was combating that. And I saw that. Do you remember Ernie Kinney?
Yes.
He's still around?
As far as I know.
Yeah. He was a master of it.
Yeah.
I co-worked with Ernie. And we had to do the usual. You have to use a token advanced dance. You have an hour of workshop. And Ernie, we had 10 squares. And I think what I did was I did some stuff with them, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I threw some things. My heart was never really in that. But I did it. You know, I did okay. They liked me because these squares was good. Well, Ernie gets them. And I didn't. For some reason, I was sitting on the sideline, and they didn't need anybody. And he puts on a Dick Jones top record, the music side, of Running Bear.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that dance?
Sure.
And it's soul. They slow, but it's archy.
Yeah.
And he gives no walkthrough. He's got 10 squares of hot shots, and they're willing to go. Well, when he got done with them, they were so humbled. If he'd said boo, they'd have jumped. And I almost, the lady next to me sitting there thought I was crazy. I almost fell off the chair. When I heard that start, I knew what was going to happen. And the only set that got it was a group of teenagers who do it as exhibition out of the whole. And then when he proceeded to do his hoedown, Patter Stuff Boy, they were no longer cocky and arrogant. They were stunned. And then what he did, he got them, and I used to do this, what he did, he got them into dancing, and he did something. And he gets you back to box 1-4, and he said something like, box and that, slam the boat, sink the ship, left Alaman. Well, there are no such calls. So everybody's standing there, they do Alaman left, because there's the corner, just go around, and they were all looking. Well, my God, their set got it. We didn't get it. And every other set, and I looked at him, he's good in for me to hear. And I used to do that when I get pushed. I did that same trick, and they come up to me and say, you going to workshop that? And I say, gee, we don't have time. Go ask your caller. Well, they go to the call, and the guy's in his book. Penderson called, what? They can't find it. So it was sort of psychological. Not fair, but psychological. I mean, I reached a point where I said, I've had enough of this. I'm going to have fun with it. So I don't know that he calls out there. Gee, Penderson had this basic. I couldn't find it. You know it? No, I never heard of it. Well, it didn't exist, and I got that from Ernie.
Yeah.
But you have to use it with care, because if you do it too much, then they figure out what you're doing. You know, you do it once every 6 months, you know, and then you always go, gee, I'd like to, but I haven't got time now, because you do it toward the end of the evening, so there's no time to workshop. So go ask me to call. I got to be a bad boy toward the end. You know. But like I said, I never mentioned names, I would never knock them, but I just did save a few dances, and then gradually I dropped out of it, and I did miss it, but it got to be where I didn't enjoy it, and once you don't enjoy something, you're not going to do a good job.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to be remembered that way, so
right.
I just stepped back and let others take over, and, you know, I read a little about it. And
well, now you're very involved in folk dance, Peter.
Well, yeah, actually, this may sound academic, but the 18th century dance that I do is not a folk dance.
Mm-hmm.
The definition of folk dance, folk is oral, and this is all written down. From 1700 to 1800 in Great Britain, they published dances with the music line usually, and just you know, first couple crossover and hey, whatever they did. And the count we estimate, well, back up a little. The Civil War, Ken Burns' Civil War series, and the baseball series is a piano player. Excuse me on that. That's Jacqueline Schwab. And Jacqueline lives out of Cambridge, and she plays for the group Bare Necessities. And she's played for me a number of times. And absolutely incredible pianist. I mean, she's something else. For her doctorate, which she never got, she went to England for 3 years, and she collected dance titles in what they call oblong books. I have an original upstairs, 1784, I think. But anyway, they're about 4x7, maybe, roughly.
Mm-hmm.
She collected, she wrote down where the book was, the date of the book, the page, the dance title, the signature was written in like 6438, 12898, mm-hmm. whatever. And I think that was all. And she didn't include vertical books or other books or magazine articles. And she collected 24,700 dance titles.
Wow.
Not counting the 5,500 in Playford. And the other ones, we estimated in 100 years in Great Britain, they'll publish 35,000 dances. This is not a folk activity. Now, there's repeats of dances. You look in the databases in America, and you'll see Soldier's Joy like 11 times. Soldier's Joy is an English film, it's not American.
Right.
It's got a set of bloody lyrics to it. But anyway, that's what came here. We know this. They're advertised, the books for sale here. We know the dances and the books were here, because this was England. New England. New York was English. Philadelphia, all in English. Wherever the British settled, they did English dance. And they were doing the same dances on both sides during the Revolutionary War. We don't get an American long ways dances until 1780s in Rhode Island, and then in the 90s you see more American dances, and we're still doing English dance.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one big block of dance and music. Like, it's awesome. That's not a folk dance. It was middle and upper class people doing it. That's why it's preserved. Folk dancing, well, actually, most of the
the folk dancing would really be the stuff out in the mountains and the little towns would be the square dance, and that would be your folk dance, and that's the stuff that was passed on orally. And the stuff we were doing in the 1940s probably would be considered folk dancing, but prior to that, it was a dance of middle and upper class people. And then it gradually, everybody got to do it, and then as they went west, whoever could remember how to call would call. And then, of course, you know, it gets worse. It gets worse, but it gets better. But, you know, it gets its own cultural style, which is, you remember in the beginning, there were all different ways of dancing. Abilene lift, I never saw it. I would have loved to have seen that. I've heard that the whole floor pulsed.
Yes, it did.
And now that's, I'm sure that's dead, gone, and buried. Yeah. Probably nobody even knows how to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, I couldn't do it because I never saw it. But
Red Warwick might have.
Yeah, he would have seen it because he lived it, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, and that vanished. And the interesting thing is when Pappy Shaw did his square dance book,
yeah,
you look in the front and he lists the favorite fiddle tone of three, four fiddlers.
Mm-hmm.
Soldier's Joy, 1770, England. College Hornpipe, which is Popeye's thing, from 1750, England. Come Haste to the Wedding, 1769 or so, English stage. Come Haste to the Wedding, Ye Friends. And there's one or two others in there that are from England, and how they ever got all the way to Colorado, you know, they don't sound quite the way they did in the original form, but I can go upstairs, I can dig out Book Soldier's Joy, I can show you the song sheet with the lyrics on that thing if you want.
Yeah.
It's the same tone, you'd recognize it. Of course, Americans, the fiddlers, they change it. But look at what's going on in Ireland, where all the Irish bands are playing American country western music.
Okay.
With an Irish touch.
Yeah.
You know, they get the whistle in there, somebody might have a million pipes going.
Right.
But they said, but God, that's kind of my joke.
Yeah.
You know? And I have a tape of the Chieftains, not a tape, a CD, the one my kids gave me. And when I was playing it, they're singing all these different songs. And all of a sudden, I'm hearing, not Kenny Rogers, what's it, Willie Nelson?
Mm-hmm.
He's singing with them. And they're mixing Irish and country Americana, and it's absolutely incredible. There's one cut there I wish I could get out and call square dance to. My gosh, it's like Weather's Cannonball. Whoa, the pipes are going, the whistles are going, because there's a similarity. And so it bounces, bounced all the way back to Europe.
Yeah.
That kind of music. And some think this is horrible, but if you analyze all of it, it's what's going on. And I've told, well, I wrote this a long time ago, that club dancers have a dress code, they have lessons, and they dance to contemporary music. And that is very traditional. Traditional dancers haven't got a dress code, dance to old-fashioned music, which in the past they didn't do. All the music, all the books I've got, and I've got facsimiles of probably 10,000 or more dancers, and maybe a couple of hundred titles, it's always the latest dances. The newest and most fashionable for the year 1767. They weren't doing old stuff. It sounds old to our ears.
Mm-hmm.
So club dancing, even though it went in strange ways to my way of looking at it, they got off dancing, as you said earlier. And the callers are not musicians. And I think that was a fatal blow. But because if you connect the two, you ever watch a marching, you know, watch a halftime when the bands march?
Yeah.
You know. I talked to guys who did this, and they're using 8 steps for 5 yards, and that 8 happens to fit the phrase.
Mm-hmm.
How else can all those people play music and march around if you don't hear music?
Right.
And if you can teach high school kids, you can teach anybody.
Yeah.
But first you got to find people who can teach it. And who could? You can teach it. Dick can teach it. I can teach it. Earl Johnson can teach it. Al Brozek can teach it. And after that, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there are, well, Jerry Help.
Sure.
And Mac Letson, I talked to Mac Letson like I was talking to Tony Parks, the concert dance teacher, and Mac was talking crazy, and he said, Chip, he mentioned another name, he was, these young guys look at me with a blank stare.
Yeah.
I understand, but see, so he knows. So he's, and that's all that I know who know, and I'm sure there are others.
Oh, yeah.
Kastner knew.
Sure.
And Gilmore, of course.
Yeah.
But that's not what the leaders wanted to hear. And of course, I think at this point, they would grasp at anything to get the people back.
Yeah.
Do you remember Bob Dawson?
Sure. Yeah.
I have upstairs a letter he wrote me in the 60s,
uh-huh,
which I quoted in the article I wrote in the New England Sports Magazine. And in the 60s, he started his program, Sport Dancing is Fun,
mm-hmm,
6 weeks of lessons.
Right.
And then he come to his
Monday night dance. And he starts another 6 weeks. You realize how many people you can get in a season down in Florida? And at the time of this letter, he had the six-weekers, then he had an intermediate group, and he had an advanced group. The advanced group got 8 to 10 squares. The intermediate group was getting from 15 to 25. And the Monday night and Tuesday nights were getting in excess of 40 squares. And he made curse marks about what the callers were doing for the activities. In the meantime, I'm making a lot of money and having fun or something like that.
Right.
This was in the 60s.
Right.
And instead of this mainstream and all the rest of this nonsense, I bet you, and I won't do it now because my hall now costs me $175, and I'm not sticking my neck out to try and get square dancing started who I've been asked to. I'll bet you if they did something like that, you could turn it around. But how many callers would be capable of doing it and be able to take just 6 weeks worth of stuff and keep people
interested?
It can be done.
Sure.
As long as you don't put the accent on the figure, put the accent on the music and the people. And get them rocking. Ed Gilmore used to say, if you play tempo fast, people tend to chug and dance straight ahead. And if you slow it down, you get this sway of the body. And your whole body rocks. And I've seen this in folk dancing, and square dancing, and contra dancing, and believe it or not, in Native American dance.
Mm-hmm.
When the singers get hot and they start going fast, the only people that can dance are the fancy dancers, and that's almost that. Student athletics, but a person like myself will dance with what they call traditional. All I can do is take very tiny steps.
Mm-hmm.
I can't boogie, I can't get my body into it, anything like that.
Yeah.
Now, Les Fourhorns, who lives way over in Plainfield, west of the full-blood Lakota from Rosebud Reservation, has a voice. Oh, man, what a voice on that man. And he knows like 500 songs. And he sings in a high-pitched voice that comes down. Well, Les would start a song, boom, 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 like this. And you're dancing, and it's almost full, and the young people say, gee, it's getting faster. He'll only bring it up to a certain point, and he gets you going. And Native American dancing is the only dancing that is totally non-phrased. There's no phrasing.
Okay.
I took phrase off, and how can you enjoy that? Well, you enjoy it in the context, enjoy it because it's a different, it's a totally different culture.
Sure, yeah.
But the drum is one beat, and the Northern plays, the song is on a different beat.
Mm-hmm.
No, I could never sing that way. They kid me. You want to sing when you make records? I said, I couldn't do that. I said, I'm a square dance caller. I've been on phrase for 45 years.
Right.
I said, there's no way I'm ever going to sing off phrase. It'd be like having a drum beat and singing Yankee Doodle at a different tempo.
Yeah.
But then I found out that they do this in Middle European and the Balkans and Turkish dancing is the same thing. The drum is doing one thing and the feet are doing something.
Right.
Yeah. But the Micmacs sing on phrase and their songs are more melodious. So it depends. It's not one thing.
Hmm.
But I have noticed about balance and weight, and if you go too fast, you don't dance well. You don't keep into it.
Yeah.
So you find people with club dancers would find me painfully slow.
Yeah.
And yet I'm probably going 120.
Right.
And the 18th century dancer down 104 beats a minute. But we're doing steps. You see, the only two dance forms that I know of where people walk are square dancing and contra dancing. All the rest of dancing was not walk. And this is something that we developed. And yet they did part of a race. Contratempo gavotte. In the English contra dancing of the 18th century, long way, the floor would rise two, three, sink, rise, this, and the whole room just pulsed.
Yeah.
Right in time, and sometimes it was a little hop, and there's chasse or sachet, but they danced, they didn't walk with
right.
figures until they got too old.
Yeah.
And then we went from the figure, the steps in the 1830s, I understand, in square dancing were so complicated it almost killed it. And then they got in, then it became fashionable to slide.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we inherited, was that slide.
Yeah.
And Henry Ford's dance, his book of which I got by 1940s original, 1920s original, I know, Benjamin Lovett,
mm-hmm.
you know that story about
sure.
what he did with Lovett.
Yeah.
Lovett was working up at that place.
Yeah, Wayside.
Yeah, and he wanted him to work for him.
Yeah.
And Lovett wouldn't leave because he bought the place.
Yeah.
But he gave him like $13,000 a year plus a Lincoln back in it. That's a lot of. He was well paid.
Had a cabbage,
right? Oh, yeah, but the thing was, on the cover of one of those books, it's called an 18th century couple, bowing and curtsying. But what he was doing was a 19th century lantern. Clark Mills is what he revived.
Okay.
That's what he actually revived, plus whatever the couple dances were. And, of course, there was another activity competing. The vintage dance. You're aware of vintage? Richard Powers?
No.
Oh, Richard started 10 years ago to do historical dance in the 19th century. And he's got a seat somewhere at Stanford University on the West Coast. The Flying Cloud Vintage Assembly has been all over the world. The vintage dance comes here. They go on. They do weekends. They go up to Rhode Island. They get on a train car and they go up the line and have dinner. They come back and they play croquet. The guys wear the white straw hats. They have a ball blanc or white outfit. They got a 10-piece orchestra playing 19th century. And one woman who does this, who used to concert dance, says, "I like being treated like a lady." And so he's got this thing going. I mean, it's another whole world. And these club callers, and they don't realize Scottish dancing, English dancing, contra dancing, vintage dancing, and what's left of folk dancing, country western, Cajun, they're all going after people.
Mm.
And most of them, now vintage dancing is not easy.
No, they have vintage dancing at the National San Antonio.
Yeah, but that's a big move. But there are people who do that.
Yeah.
And I get the flyers and all kinds of stuff and workshops going on all the time here up in Hartford. And they're getting people. And they're getting young people. Not just gray hair. They're getting all ages. You know, as you see club dancing, it's mostly older people.
Sure.
And that's partly because of the social chain. I mean, young people are working two jobs.
Yeah.
And three jobs just to survive. And like I said, I wouldn't want to go out and have some egotist on, "Well, I know this." And
yeah, okay, now we've got a brand new tape, so let's go.
Okay, well, I mentioned the last, in talking about teaching, the last festival I went to national was in Baltimore, and I was down in D.C. for a graphics seminar my company sent me to on this kind of stuff.
Right.
I mean, and I've used it. That was quite a few years ago. And on the way back, I had booked I called a traditional dance on Friday night, and then I got booked, and then I did something at the festival on Saturday. Because, you know, up from Washington to Baltimore wasn't that far. Anyway, I went in, and I did a traditional contra dance in a room, and they were piping the sound through a ceiling speaker. It was the worst quality sound you could hear, and of course this really bothered me because the essence of traditional dance is the music.
Right.
And when you got squawk, squawk, squeak, it kind of bothered me. But anyway, I did my thing, and as I was leaving, I wanted to walk into the caller's chat room over there. The hospitality room was just down around the corner. And as I walked by, there was a room, and there was two squares in there, and they were in box 1-4. And the teacher was teaching them the Hey for Four. And I watched for a minute. And I went on, and I went into the room. I got a cup of coffee. I shook hands with different people. It was very interesting because one person whose name shall not be mentioned was moving around. I got a politician's handshake and a phoniest grin you ever saw. Because, see, I'd walked out, and I'd done weekends with this person. I'd left the activity. And I was a traitor. I didn't see it that way because everybody else was genial. Well, anyway, I went through, had a donut, and came back out, and they were still in the same position, and the person was still teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't say anything. I don't know who it was, and I don't care. But the night before, I was at a dance in a National Historic Site. They had a big ballroom there. I forget that. It was a recreation area or something there. Big room, and they had sound set up. The guy had a snake and a thing on the side because it was a little touching. We had a 7-piece band, six or seven piece up front, about seven more sitting in, about 14-piece band, had about 30 or so squares filled. I'm calling this band, filling the room. And at that time, I would do squares and contras. Now, there's been a movement where the contra dancers don't want squares at all.
Mm-hmm.
Some say it's because they can't think. But it's mostly because most of the traditional callers can't call squares well.
Right.
They don't have any idea what they're doing. I've heard tapes of them and I've seen it. They don't know how to call them.
Yeah.
And so the people are uncomfortable because they're not on a phrase. But anyway, Ted Cinello always did them. And I stopped calling because I will not call all night of concert. I want two squares, two concerts, and they don't want that. But at the time, it was okay. So I'm doing my thing, and about 75% of those people, or 50% at least, were off the street. So here you got a band, and, well, I'm doing my thing, and I'm doing my thing, and I'm doing my thing. Then I get about three quarters of the way through the evening, and I made a decision to do something. And this I learned from Dick Jones. I put the ladies in the center back to back, and I had them come out around the men's star left, around the ladies' star left, and swing. Then I did that a while. Then I had the men's star left around the opposite ladies' star left, around the partner element left, and swing. And then you put both parts together, and you have cross haze.
Mm-hmm.
While I'm doing this, mostly talking over music, I mean, and you know, no, just doing it, never told them what I was doing, and I can still remember. Because in the front where the sharks were, that's what they call the hot shot dancers in traditional sharks and continental, they're the ones that are up the front around the floor. That's the term. They have a problem. How to assimilate new dancers.
Yeah.
How to keep the old dancers happy. They ran a convention or something out in the mid around the Great Lakes. Fran was reading me the subjects, and I was teasing her to the point where she got annoyed at me because every single subject was exactly the same thing as what club dancing was done wrong. They were having all the same problems. Of course. Because they were all doing the same thing. They're making it more complicated and losing the point. And it has dropped off a little. Not a lot, but it's still far healthier than it. Well, anyway, I heard this guy right in front of me say, gee, D, he's doing a hay. He didn't even know it.
Yeah.
And then I got him, and I let go hands, and then they were doing it without hands, and then I had the head couple ladies back to back, and now they're doing a straight reel of four and sides and face. Beginners. Half of them were beginners. And I learned this procedure from Dick Jones and then polished it more. And I think Dick Ledger would use it the same form. But I attribute it to the late Dick Jones. Anyway, and then here I am the next day, and in 10 minutes, this caller is going on to teach him a hay and do this. And they haven't moved.
Yeah.
And here I had 30 sets, mostly by what we call verbal teaching. I do a lot of teaching with a band where it's simple, like at Lincoln Center, where I'll just go like this to the band, and they keep playing soft. I put a shush sign up, and they play soft, and I'll explain a figure. That does two things. Number one, it keeps the music going, and number two, it makes them listen to voice over music. And, you know, you're doing two things at once. I mean, everything I do has a reason, even though I don't always think about it at the time. That might be like teaching forward and back, and then I say, okay, now you're ready, go forward and back, and I point to the band, and of course they hit the downbeat of that next phrase, and everybody goes, yay! See, but anyway, the point was that I taught Hay without ever telling him what I was doing, and here in the up the line, people had gone on, I felt so sorry for those dancers, they're going to walk out of there and never come near traditional dance again. But you said right in the beginning, and I don't think it would be in the tape, that the activity suffers from good teaching and musicianship. And, there's no reason to be afraid of music. Like I said, I don't play an instrument. I can play any tune I know on a piano with one finger. That's all.
Yeah.
Not necessarily in time. I've been able to do that since I was a kid, but I know my phrases, I know my A's, I know my B's, I can look at music. When I'm getting to the point where I typeset music, I'm getting to really understand it. And I know the mathematics now down cold.
Mm-hmm.
If you got 6/8 time, you can't put 7/8 notes in the measure. First of all, the program dumps it to the next one. Second of all, I know. But you can put a dotted eighth and a 16th. I mean, this is just mathematics. Any left brain person can learn that. And I've learned it, but I can't play music.
Yeah.
Although I'm reaching a point where I might be able to, but the thing is, with square dancing, these callers could learn this. And dancers, people can be taught to dance to phrase. It's not something that's out of our culture. And I and others can prove them wrong on that anytime I do a one-night stand. I keep half the floor totally on the phrase for 2 hours, and I'm including kids. The other half, they miss a little bit. And that's without even telling them.
Right.
Except occasionally they'll say, wait for me, if they start to jump the call, or else I'll change the call. You know, the old trick, call a trap. You know, I call it keeping them honest, but And people will come back to it. Dick will tell you this, will remember this. Dick Ledger was calling up at the former Brookfield Club. They're born. There's another group called the Tomahawk Squares or something. But
advanced group.
Yeah, well, I watched that, and it's they're having a good time, but it's very sterile to me.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I mean, I grant them what they do, but I don't call it dancing.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just doing, and it's great. They've got a community. Oh, it's like two squares. But anyway, Dick at the time was calling for the Trailblazers.
Yeah, one of our callers up said, "Why do you use music?"
Well, that's the help. I just get a guy beating on the drum.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and up and down. But anyway, that's okay, except that's not going to bring home the bread. I would have much more joy with intermediate or less dancers filling the room and the whole place with that lovely joy. Joy, it sounds corny, but there was a joy.
Sure.
It's gone.
Yeah.
But anyway, so Fran was with me at this dance. We come, I don't know why she was with me. Well, I think maybe they were getting, I don't know, they used to, one of the Girl Scout groups, they used to do a potluck. Maybe she came from Danbury, but whatever. I looked at the watch, because it was 9:45. Oh, Dick is calling in the Trailblazer, Huckleberry Hill School. So we drove in, and of course, Woods West, I think I had a beret on, you know, and nobody knew us hardly. And Dick pulls all over, "How you doing? Great," you know. So we got into, he said, "You're going to square dance?" You know, he told others who we were, which didn't mean much, but it's okay. But anyway, I had my 15 minutes of glory. But anyway, he said, whatever the square was, he said, "You can do it." And I think it had a grand square. Well, we did it. And then, whatever he did a contra. So I said, "Well, we'll do the contra." We get in a contra. And he does a club dance of contra, you know, crossed over, and so we don't get confused. But we're dancing in a line, and we're just walking. But we're going. And we come down, and we came to this couple. And it was just like, I think I know you. They were dancers. Oh, it was just a joy. I mean, we just went and we went and it flowed, and then we met the next couple and we were walking again. And then it was like one more and we were at the bottom, and I'm staring at that couple. And all of a sudden it came back to me and I said, "I know who they are. I don't know their names." I said, and I got real smug. I said, "Guess who taught them dance?" And she looked at me and I went, blew my fingers and went like that. I'm like, "I taught them to dance," and the minute they were with us in the set, it came right back to them.
Yeah.
Once you learn to dance, you will dance if the leader will let you.
Right.
And they came right back to it. And the same thing happened to me when the late Walt over there in Milford, that club,
mm-hmm.
Milford Square Dance Club,
yeah.
Walt something, a Polish type last name I can never get right. Well, anyway, he tried to get me back into club dancing. And I actually filled in his classes for Alan Brozek a couple of times, but I didn't. I did it as a favor, but I think he was hoping I'd come back, and I told him, I said, "I don't like it, I don't want to," but I did it, and then I did the beginner's dance, and yeah, 5-6 squares, whatever, and I do what I do, and I know that some of them didn't understand what I was doing, as one said, "You're different," you know, but I wasn't going back, but when I did grand square, and it was two sets in the back, and they flowed, because they were all X, Y, and squares that I had taught to dance. And a couple of them danced A77. But the instant you gave them that thing, they never jumped. All the rest were running around. No idea. And I was watching the ones in the back, because I refuse to call reverse and then you're supposed to. I don't care what they're doing. I mean, I am in charge. You will dance to me.
Yeah.
But I watched them and I scanned them and I said, "I taught every one of those people to dance." Or they were people that knew you. All from the past.
Yeah.
When we phrased, and they will do it if you'll let them. By God, they'll do it. And they did it. And I remember all these are things that go in and out of it. And my own feeling with the present era is they have to go back to phrase dancing.
Hmm.
I think that's what they got to do. But see, I even got pushed here in Nomad when I was calling. And when I first started my first paddock call, I wound up doing Stephanie Chain. But they were pushing me, just one set to my left a little bit, because contra dancing was pushed. And I refused to be pushed, and they backed right into the phrase. You know, but if I had been a neophyte or was started to clip a little bit to keep up with them, I would have blown the whole thing. But I know better, and that comes with age. And I just refused, and they will fall right into the room, tell you, Dick will tell you.
Right.
Hold your ground.
Right.
But, you know, so anyway, that's where it's gone, and I'm not in it. I mean, it, as far as I'm personally concerned, if the whole thing died, it isn't going to affect me, but I still feel bad. because it was a good activity and we had a great thing going.
Yeah.
And I blame a lot of the top leaders who people who just haven't making so much money. I blame them for not being leaders.
Yeah.
And but on the other hand, they're people. You know, and I only reason I probably ever got worse than those, I met Ed Gilmore, who saw it coming before it started. Mm-hmm. But you're a voice crying in the wind when everybody's making a lot of money and everything's going well.
Yeah.
You know, you're nuts. I was called old-fashioned so many times and out of touch.
Right.
And those clubs are gone. Those people are gone. I'm still here. I'm still calling.
Right.
You know what I mean? I can't call a club dance anymore. I do wheel and deal and sweep a quarter and things like that, but I don't know for nothing anymore.
Yeah.
But I remember Ed Gilmore in the old Hotel Green. Box One Ford and Ocean Wave. Everybody promenade a quarter. Men change places, ladies change. He was calling circulation trades before they were invented.
Right.
And we all did it. Nobody thought, sure, I can do that. You know. And then a couple of years later, it got invented. And I remember one of the people who invented it got very bent out of shape. When somebody like me or somebody reminded them that other calls had been doing this for, you know. I remember you and I think of your brother because he was one of the callers I went and danced with, one of the few I would dance to.
Right.
When you know, you'd be in an Alamandar and you'd drop left hands to a left Alamand. It later became slip the clutch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you can call in the name of your people, like, don't do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And Franny Heinz made a, he's passed on, isn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, but then Franny was, and then you just did, or something. I never heard him do it, but I always heard about it. I mean, he was.
Yeah, you just did AC/DC.
Yeah, right, and he talked you through it.
Yeah.
So anyway, I don't think they will ever turn it around unless they get on the music. Because watch Country Western. Every night on one of the channels here, there's several programs.
Yeah.
And there's no club dancing coast to coast on anything.
Right.
In fact, one of the programs is called Club Dancing, which I find very ironic. But you got all ages and sizes and weights and shapes and costumes and outfits, and they're dancer to music. Some of those dancers are oddly phrased, but the Texas Swing is, to me, to Lindy.
Yeah.
You know, well, Greek dancing is out of phrase.
Yeah.
But that's the only, Greek dancing is definitely out of phrase, but the music, but the figures, the steps are in time to the music at least.
Yeah.
And they are doing steps. And I mean, I see guys with mustaches and they're doing heel and toe and shuffle. They're having a great time. But I also hear rumors that the dancers are, they're making up harder and harder dances.
Yeah.
And they will get in the same, they'll fall into the same box. And then, and Cajun, have you ever danced Cajun?
No, I've saw it at the National, I couldn't tag it.
Well, actually, if you look at it really carefully, you use this funny little step, and a Cajun is a lot like Lil Indy.
Yeah.
It's just another form of the other thing. You just get this little, I can't even remember, but I can pick it up. They had a Cajun band over right at the top of the hill. It used to be a church opposite the flagpole. Now it's a meeting hall.
Mm-hmm.
And they use it. And they did Cajun. People were dancing in the aisles.
Yeah.
And it's just a silly little step.
Yeah.
But again, and you get into the music, you know.
Yeah.
And then Zydeco is a form. Zydeco has got 50s rock mixed with Cajun.
Uh-huh.
But the music will bring the dead. I mean it. I mean, you can't help dancing. But if you listen to one of those club records, tong, 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 tong.
Yeah.
You know, like you say, why you have music at all?
Right.
So, that's my own opinion. I doubt if I will live to see anything happen. You know, I mean, I'm not planning on leaving, but I'm in my 60s. And
one of the things I wanted to ask you about, you're one of the few callers that I know that use tapes for instead of records.
Well, as I said, the kind of music I use, which is traditional music, records come from England or Scotland, and they're LPs. And I used to be able to go into a local record store and go on the folk dance and on the Scotland and get Jimmy Shan.
Hmm.
They're gone.
Yes.
They're gone. Forever. So it's either buy a CD, which I don't have any way of playing on the road, and how do you change the speed?
Right.
Yeah, although I understand they are available and will be available more. So I know a lot of the 18th century people do what I do, and I'm folk dance leaders. A lot of the folk dance leaders use tapes. In the international folk dancing, Eve Moreau uses them, Sandy Stockman uses them, they're both from Canada. George Fogg, the English dancer, is still using records, but I've watched him damage records because his needle bounces and then you've lost it.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, you can buy them a lot of places. I use a place called Polyline out of Illinois. You can buy 100, 5, 7, 10 minute aside tapes, and they aren't much, 15 to 20 cents a piece. Then you buy the boxes, you take one aside. You just flip it over and And that's how I do it. And it's really, you get used to it. The only thing that's a drawback to it, if you're a paddock, you can't see the end coming.
Mm-hmm.
And it just stops.
Yeah.
But then that'll bring me back. Ricky Holden, I understand, is still around in Denmark or somewhere?
Belgium,
okay. That was close. And Ricky said many years ago, if you can't call good, call fast.
Remember that?
Yeah. He said that, and I didn't understand it, but later in my life I did, and it's the same thing with dancing. It is much harder to dance physically slow than fast.
Yeah.
Because then the slower you go, the more body control you've got to have. But I always remember Ricky, can't call good, call fast, and somebody else, and I don't know who it was, said, talking about a 5-minute hold-on record. If you can't say it in 5 minutes, you've got nothing to say.
Mm-hmm.
And yet these people go on for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And they're doing this with contras now. The contra will last 20 minutes. And somebody said, oh, that's wild. I said, in my whole life, I can't remember one dance for 20 minutes.
Right.
Give me a break.
I've
had no problems with tapes, really.
Okay.
And you can get tape recorders. I just bought one, and I didn't know I was getting this. If it completely wound, and I hit play and fast forward, it stops at the tune and then starts to play.
Ah.
And if you're watching the indicator, the instant the number stops, if you hit stop, you're right on the money. Then if you start playing and you want to go back, you hit play and reverse, and it goes right back and starts to play again.
Okay.
So it's sort of like picking the needle up.
Yeah.
It's just something you get used to.
Yeah. What kind of remember the brand of that?
Oh, that one I got out of Long Electronics in Atlanta, Georgia.
Uh-huh.
And it's JVC brand, because it has variable speed on one side.
Okay.
And that, I have to have variable speed. Although most of my tapes are within their range, but occasionally there's a tune that's recorded too fast.
Yeah.
And even though I've got an old record player, I can't slow it down enough, but I want the tone. So I get it as slow as I can. Then I have or you get a slippery floor.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, those are things you're supposed to pay attention to.
Right.
You know, JVC, it was $280, which isn't bad. Because
yeah.
A Marantz is going to cost you $400 in stereo.
Yeah, right.
And they're tiny.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, it's a standard 19-inch rack with not so big. I might be able to find it a catalog and copy the page for you. But anyway, I just got that, and I was surprised because it had the band search on it. I didn't know I was getting that. Because my old one had 8 buttons, and you could push 3 and it would go to number 3.
Mm-hmm.
But I've only got 3 tapes that have 3 tunes on it. I decided that was confusing,
mm-hmm.
and I went one to one, and I'm too busy to retape. But I know a number of, I can't name, but I could point to 6 or 8 leaders that I'm aware of that have been using tapes for years. I sort of had to.
Yeah. Tell us, too, about you have a studio here in your home, and your wife, Franny, is using... Not a synthesizer, but something like that, and you're making tapes for your own
18th
personal
century.
Use.
It's called sampled sound, and that's where the guy's playing a violin, they hold a microphone out, and they record it, and then somehow the computer does something, and now you have that sound. And it's somehow, that's how they make the dogs sing on the TV commercials.
Yeah.
They record one dog barking, or you could sneeze,
yeah.
And then you tell the computer, and then whatever note it is, it makes that sound.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have, that's the black box. And then you have to have a computer program and a computer, and you have to have an electronic keyboard, which is also sampled. And then there's a black box that has what most people call an echo chamber, but it's really, there are rooms that have different depths and sounds, and it's very subtle. I asked a professional, how do you use this thing? And he says, you try it till you hear something you like and make a note. And he's got his studio. But anyway, and it's a semi-professional model. We've got pretty decent stuff. And different songs, depending on if you use a clarinet. So she can play clarinet, and the hardest thing for her was to play stringed and wind instruments using fingers and learning how to make them sound legato and smooth, but she's learned. And she lays down one track at a time. And then she adds and does the harmonies, but she can multiply and add. You know this Jane Austen thing? That this movie Jane Austen they did about Jane Austen.
Yeah.
Well, she's hot right now for whatever reason. It's the nostalgia thing. But anyway, there's a dance mentioned. She mentions a dance in her letters. It's not in the movie, called La Boulangère. Well, we had the music to that, and Fran has actually made me a tape of it. And it's a dance she says went on for an hour. Well, I figured out why it could go on for an hour. And actually, the dance could be done in a one-night stand. Well, Fran made me the take. I haven't tried it yet, but I have it. I'm trying to... I want to call ASCAP and BMI and find out what it would cost me, what royalties I'd have to pay to make a set of tapes calling the way I call, so that someday somebody might want to learn how to cue on a singing call and make the dancers dance where they belong on the music. And I don't think when I got done with them, they say, how many tapes are you going to make? I said, probably 200. And I said, oh, forget it. Or send us $50.
Yeah.
And then she could make them and make them with the, you know, bumpy piano instead. She's always playing light, but bang it out, you know, in the good old summertime or whatever. I have a whole set of favorites I like. You know, I'd like to do that, but I don't see any great market for it.
Right.
It would just be a thing. And then at least you would have a style, because I wrote an article on how to do this for Ralph Page and Morgan Junket some years ago. Somewhere I've got that too.
Yeah.
And it's just simply, and the same with catcalling. Everybody knows Queen's Quadrille, Jerry Held's Queen's Quadrille, and they all use Sweet Georgia Brown, and usually too fast, but anyway, and those that know how to cue, you know, they say heads right and left through, ladies change, and you know, you prompt it, just like a round dance teacher. Well, if you put that, you could do the same thing to a hoedown. You know, and you say heads right and left through, and right and left through, and in between the prompts you throw patter. I call them quadrilles with hype. And being a Western caller, I have the hype that's still in me.
Yeah.
And so I get up there and I call these dances the folk dances, and they just think this is the greatest thing in the world because they flow. Because if you put on a 19th century jig, and you prompted it, head forward, right and left, or something, they would be dancing with the same timing that I've got this Sally Gooden going, or whatever, and they're boogieing around, and they're getting all excited, but they're still on the damn phrase, and at the end of the night, if they went a whole night, the first time I danced to Ed Gilmore was at Marin and Michael Herman's, and I'd heard about this guy, and I wasn't married to Elaine, we were, you know, late teens, and we went down dressed like cowboys, and there's this guy, and we looked at him, and we danced to him, and when we left, I remember saying, I'm not tired. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I'm not tired.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to know why, because I had been calling a little bit, and that's how I started to follow him. And he taught me why, because he put you on the phrase, he slowed the tempos down, and he made it flow.
Yeah.
And I can remember that. It just came to me. And I can see the street, and what I can't think of his name, but I'm not tired. And that was Gilmore.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a host of others. There was, you know, anyone who worked with Gilmore, anyone who was in direct contact, and like your brother, because he'd hold your brother down, because Al liked to get going.
Yeah.
But Ed would hold him down, because he was that way. He'd do it nicely, but he'd always keep the pace. And do you remember what his signature dance was? Bye-bye Blues? Bye-bye.
Yeah.
That was his, I call it a signature dance. When he put that on, it was over. You know it was the end. And so, the last dance I did at Nomad, my hour, Saturday night, I told the people, my mentor, used this tune. I said, I don't remember what he called for, but he'd make it up, I think. And I said, so for my mentor, Ed Gilmore, and I had this folk dance band. Yeah, I mean, these are all folkies, but they could sight read, because I had typeset the music, and Fran had checked it. We did Bye-Bye Blues, and everybody's singing away. And I said, this is for you, Ed. But that was what he would do. But it was this masterful use of music. Remember the Firehouse 5 plus 2?
Sure.
He called Alabama Jubilee to that. And that's when I learned that the human ear cannot hear less than a 3 dB elevation. This is very technical, but he told me this. You can't hear a less than a 3 dB change in volume, which means if you increase the volume in increments less than 3 decibels, the dancers aren't aware you're raising your volume. And he would start that thing off, and it was a simple dance, and he'd keep moving it up. And you had no way to compare, and he'd have that thing pretty loud, and he had these club dancers dancing like children, going around like crazy. I can remember somebody on Long Island, this guy was pretty heavy and dignified, he was put off the floor, and it was all done. And they cheer and they yell. And he says, is the music too loud? No, no.
Yeah.
And he'd play it, and they say, yes. He said, you just danced to that. No, we didn't.
Yeah.
And I learned that. But it's a trick you got to be real careful with. You know, it's like the guys with the button on the mic.
Yeah.
Oh, do it. Oh, Lord. Oh, nah, I find that. Because a band doesn't play that way.
Right.
Oh, boom. Occasionally I shush a band when I'm teaching. Or, you can shush them for effect. But usually, if you have decent musicians, they usually take them turns. And when they know it's, I'll give them a signal one more time. And if they're playing soft, when it comes the last time in a singing call or something, boy, you got all four or five or three pounding away, and they just build it up, you know.
Right.
And of course, it cranks the dancers up like key changes do.
Right.
I have a range of musical range I've done just because. And they start off and they do that octave, half an octave up, or whatever they do, you know, half a step, not an octave, half a step up, and then drop back down again. And you know it's coming, and you can crank up folk dances just as easy as club dances, and yet, what do you call it? Nothing. Ladies chain back, you know, the old Alabama
sure.
Jubilee. And that's where I think it's at, and there are a lot of dedicated men and women out there, but I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, because I'm only aware of what's going on in Connecticut, and basically, like I said, you get 781 dancers at a festival where we used to get, you remember how many used to go to that thing, and you told me they got 1,300 at the New England?
1,700.
I mean, it's sad.
Yeah.
And the problem is, of course, that once something starts sliding, it's tough. It's tough to stop it, you know. I mean, it's one thing if you had nothing and you got to start. That's a struggle. But when you've got something that did so well for so long, all of a sudden the thing is collapsing.
Yeah.
People get frantic, you know. And I'm too busy for one thing. And the only thing I could tell them was to learn how to phrase call and get rid of all the figures that don't phrase, or at least get in and out of it, which is what Gilmore did. I mean, not everything was phrased, and not everything on that club goal was phrased, but forwards and backs got to take 8 steps. I can tell you who it was. I was at Connecticut Callers, and I was doing my hour, and I think I was using one of a McGregor record. I can't remember. I think, but anyway, I was calling, and between my first and second number, a young man jumped up on the little platform and says, "How do you do that?" And I said, "How do I do what, my son?" No, I didn't say that, but I did ask him. I didn't say my son. I said, "How do I do what?" And that was a deliberate question, but I want to make sure. He says, "How do you keep the whole floor together?" And I said, "That's what phrasing is." And of course, I had another number too. I said, "Talk to me afterwards." And he hopped down, and I did my singing call, and then I met him. And I talked to him, and I said, "If you want to learn, come to my house." And I spent 3 hours with him at my other house on the other side of town. So this was before my divorce. It was over 20 years ago. And I taught him the basics of phrasing. His name is Clint McLean.
Mm-hmm.
And Clint was a good caller. Clint, I don't think, calls much anymore.
Yeah.
Well, he's got
He's starting to get back into it.
Yeah, he's a doctor, and he has the eye disease. Yeah, I mean, he diagnoses lenses.
Right.
And, piping it direct in, I said, "You can't do that. You got to have tone, and you have to have tone for the music, and you got to have tone for the voice." They figured it out real quick.
Yeah.
But I happened to go by the guy, and he says, "Well, we had never done this hotel, the big hotel downtown Washington." Well, what they ran several festivals there, and it had a grand staircase of red carpet that went down to a landing. And if you were on top before the landing, you could see the dance floor, but you couldn't hear it because the speakers are in the ceiling coming down.
Right.
And I remember standing with Elaine and a bunch of people, and somebody was, they were fumbling for a program that was calling, and I said, "Gilmore." They said, "How do you know? I can't hear him." I said, "Look at the floor." I said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Watch the floor." I said, "Every set is starting and stopping in every direction, line, circle." "Oh, yeah." I said, "You watch." And I went, "It is." I said, "I know it is, because that was Gilmore." And that's the other point. If all the figures had timing that at least were in multiples of divisions of four instead of these weird sixes, and if every figure had a thing like that, then if you taught beginners and experienced dancers, no matter how much experienced dancers knew, they never executed a figure in less time, you could keep them together. But if the hot shots are going to go forward and back in four beats and the beginners aren't, then all of a sudden your sets start to get ragged. And if a square through, like they got square through, I think, down to 8 steps. And how you do 4 sides and 3 corners and 8, beyond my thinking.
Yeah.
But it used to be like 11 or 12 at least. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But the thing is, then you would have a glue that would hold them all together, and that glue would be the timing.
Yeah.
But And the experienced dancers would simply have to just learn, as we used to hold off and stay on the music. And the beginners would be on that ragged edge, but at least everybody be together in the same place at the same time. And I also think that they'd like it more if they got into that music, you know. But, like I said, they call me old-fashioned, and I don't really think so.
Well, I said for some time, I talked with Ed Ruddy about this yesterday, that to try to do that, I don't think we'd ever be able to train our present-day club dancers.
Somebody else said the exact same thing.
We'd have to start all over.
You have to start over. You're right. That the same. This came up at Connecticut College.
Yeah.
They said, Chip, we can't change them. I said, I agree. I agree, but what are you going to do? I think that Bob Dawson's six-week idea would work, but you'd have to get a hall, you'd have to do the advertising, you'd have to stick to your guns, and I, quite frankly, am too busy.
Well, that's the basis of the CDP program, of course.
That's community dance.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're using some of that English stuff, too, or not? Or just
well, have you got a copy of Dancing for Busy People?
I've never even heard of it.
Yeah, okay, you should get a copy.
It's probably what... Like the English, that set of English books, the community dance books, which has the four or five couple long ways and simple squares and couple face couple and things like that. Yeah. But it's all phrased, though. All that English dancing is phrased.
Well, this book is, too. That, very, very well done. Done by Bob Howell, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Cal Campbell and Ken Kern.
I don't know the other two, but Howell I know. He's been trying
Cal
for years.
Cal is from Colorado, and Ken Kern happens to live in Albuquerque now. He used to work for Sets and Order. He did the promotion of Sets and Order's promotion records.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, he was one of the original Cheyenne Mountain Dancers.
Another one? Oh, yeah. Wild.
And you should get a copy of that.
I'll have to look for it.
Very
I'm
nice
going to write
book.
That down, because I'd just like to know. Because I occasionally meet callers in the traditional field, and they have their own... The problem, as I said, when I called the other night, was I told a couple of these younger men, I mean, they're in their late 30s now, and I said, what you heard me do is going to die. Because there's only a handful of us left that I know of. And I said, because there's no interest in it. And I just did I've done a one-night stand-up at Trinity Church here. And, you know, you go in, you got teenagers, you got 40s, 50s, 60s, and I do records. I do what we used to do. You can do right and left dudes in Chainsland, and they're all dancing and laughing. They say, hey, this is fun. We should do it more often. And I keep saying, well, why don't you? Because I don't want to run it. I want them to run it once a month and hire me. I'm too busy. They've got the hall. They've got the insurance. Just run them once a month. And I'll come and call. I'll charge them less because it's only a mile and a half from here. Three quarters come up on them once. I'd love it. And I bet you in a couple of months we'd pack them in.
Sure.
And, of course, I got enough brains. I'd never raise the level.
Right.
And I got enough dancers to keep me dancing for another 30 years. And I'd get Fran to make me Lady Around the Lady on tape. You make me this, you know, because you can't buy it anymore.
Sure.
You know, I think Pioneer had somebody. Didn't your brother do that
Lodge.
One? And Lloyd did it now. Did it four times through?
Yeah,
because it used to be only three times through on a Folkcraft record.
Oh, yeah.
And you had to put it back to do a, you know, Barnacle Bill the Sailor and I'm a Bum.
That's on a light show.
Oh, it is. Okay. Yeah. Well, all that stuff.
Of course, Barnacle Bill doesn't work like it does with live music.
Oh, of course not. No. No. But you got to drag it out. But I just think that something like that would go. But you got to have a mindset that you're going in to entertain and the object is not to show how much you know.
Right.
Or be complicated. Because I used to watch Tony Parks, you know Tony who he is, and Ted Cinella.
Yeah.
When you watch them work, and Ed Gilmore, and all the names, all these big names, when they were calling, it never looked like they were doing anything.
Right.
And so the new caller said, well, I can do that. And you're watching years of experience. Mm-hmm. And the easier you make it look, I think the more successful you are.
Did you ever know Rod Lunell?
Yes. No. I knew of him. And I heard he was one heck of a guy.
He and Duke Miller?
Duke I knew.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Duke used to come when I did Western Square Dancing up at that Ponderosa. And
Ponderosa.
He'd show up chewing on his lollipop because he could club dance.
Yeah. Oh, he could.
And he'd make comments because I'm calling down the middle of the road and the hot shots are tripping over their feet trying to figure me out.
Yeah.
In fact, one set left early. Yeah. Went off grumbling, you know, and Duke, he said they couldn't dance.
Yeah.
Well, they think we're trying to anticipate me, and you just don't do that.
Right.
But what he said was, mate, this is about folk dancing, and this is from the editor of the directory, Ron Houston, whoever he is.
Make folk dancing simpler for newcomers. Reject the ridiculous choreography that pervade contemporary teaching. And rely on basic figures that have emerged from our collective soul in less of a decade and centuries in less sophisticated communities. Same thing. And then the other one was hide your abilities. You don't impress newcomers with your personal excellence in dancing. You just scare them away. Demonstrate instead your basic friendship and your underlying concern for the welfare of all those around you. And he goes on, while that's difficult, my own personal feeling when I teach is to get them dancing as quick as possible and then get out of the way.
Yeah.
And just be there. And I naturally like people, but I consider what I do a service. And I'll tell you, hokey as it sounds, when every time I do one of these dances halfway in, I just say, you can call it a prayer, I just say, thank you for the privilege of being able to do what I do.
Yeah.
And for a few minutes, make joy.
Yeah.
Fun. And at New York City, at the Lincoln Center Dance, we get 700 dancers dancing, about 3,000 watching. Fran is leading a six-piece band, and I'm the producer, which means I get the band, the other caller, MC in one of two calls. And I have had Al Bozek this year. I've had Al about four or five times, but he's almost as reliable. I don't have to worry about what he's going to do. I know he's not going to screw up the evening.
Right.
I don't even know what he calls anymore. We don't even plan. I said, I'm going to do this, all right, I'll do that, do it. But while he's calling, I'm out walking around.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm so far away from him that he's about that high. I mean, I'm almost football field away from him. And I usually wear, he dresses conservative, but I always wear something like, this time I wore a white shirt and a bright red vest open, and I got one of those hats there, like a Indiana Jones hat.
Oh,
no, not the tricone, but Indiana Jones kind of hat.
Yeah.
So when I'm down walking around, the dancers, the people who are there know who I am, because if not, you wouldn't be able to tell who I was.
Right, right.
That way I can talk to people, and three times that night, I think it was, three different, and these were men. These were men over 50, the New York, cynical New Yorker, saying, you know, New York needs more of this. He says, people are looking at one another, they're holding hands and they're laughing.
Yeah.
And this is from the public.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what it's all about.
Yeah.
And to me, when I leave and people go out thanking me for the evening, I've done my job.
Yeah.
And what I do, in a way, is so easy. Sometimes I feel guilty. On the other hand, it isn't easy at all, working with beginners. But all I'm letting them do is phrase dance to good music.
Mm.
We were talking about boom chuck. Well, chuck is the upbeat, the offbeat, not upbeat. That's not correct, I've discovered. Downbeat is not correct. The footfall. Downbeat is what a conductor does. It's the first.
Okay.
I have to know this because I write these books to academics, and if
right.
I'm wrong, they'll call it folk dancing and dismiss it. But the offbeat, or the chuck, is where the body gets the lift. See, Ed Gilmore analyzed exactly what your body does in motion. So all you're giving club dancers is, that's all. But in traditional music, they're getting deedly deedles to lift.
Okay.
And the old records and that shindig in the barn, that's musical.
Yeah.
And they're giving them music, and you're getting a lift out of the music. And when you got these dumb, see, you know, Gilmore did the boom chuck, but he dropped that. He got away from that heavy beat after he used them a while.
Right.
Because it was a novelty, but he still had a strong melody line over the top. He had a fiddle.
Yes.
But when you have these records where they're doing nothing but cha, man, that drives me nuts.
Yeah.
Dancing to it, there's nothing there.
Yeah.
And the old music, that's why I say you put on Scottish music, English music, French Canadian, or Southern Mountain, you got them half beat already. Just play the music and then let them dance.
Right.
And you don't have to have complication. Now, if you're going to go week after week, you're going to have to do something. But you can still get into your notes and stuff and find dances and,
right.
and things like that. And as long as you keep changing the program, and just don't listen to the hot stuff.
Yeah. Well, this book that the...
I got to write that down.
Dancing for Busy People.
Because that's a great title.
And they operate with... their entire program is 24 basics.
I love it. Dancing for...
Busy People.
That's a superb. You know where I can get it?
Sure, right to Bob Howell.
Bob Howell. I'm going to have to find him.
I can get to his address.
Yeah.
I don't think I have it with me.
That's all right.
I can get it for you.
Yeah, if you could, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah.
Because
Well,
I'd like to have it
because I can always learn. It's always something. I mean, I'm 45 years and I'm always learning. I'll see something out there, sure. That does or something that I'll say, hey, I like that.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll jump right in and I'll just add to what I do.
It goes in the book. Right?
Yeah, you know, it goes into your head or whatever. But I know Al would be interested in something like that too.
Yeah.
And plus the fact, you know, it might steer somebody somewhere, because Western dancing or club dancing, whatever you want to call it, in its present state is going nowhere.
Yeah.
I mean, occasionally, yeah. Now, Bob Paris has still got a little group going,
yeah.
And you said Brookfield's got a couple of squares, and you mentioned another club, Danbury, still.
Yeah, Matt Harris.
But that's the caller, and they're lucky.
Yeah.
I mean, they're lucky, because, I mean, the number of clubs that don't exist is awesome.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I talked with Ed Ruddy yesterday, and Dave Haas a couple of days ago, and I said, you know, people in New England, compared to the rest of the country, really don't realize how lucky they are to have the talent of calling that they do have.
Yeah.
And now we'll all concede that there's a lot of non-talent around, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh,
there isn't any activity.
Of course there is. I mean, my wife and Fred used to dance Scottish dancing.
Right.
And she was even performing group, and they brought in a certified Scottish teacher to teach the advanced dancers upstairs, all the beginners. And they went to the instructor and said, either that teacher goes or we go. The person was so bad. So
yeah.
Even if you got your papers. That's why I say, somebody can say they're Choral Lab certified. I get a set of questions about music and dance, and 9 out of 10 wouldn't answer. You could answer it, Dick Ledger could answer it, Earl. But most of them, it's like getting a PhD in something. That doesn't mean you got any wisdom.
Right.
You know, you passed the course.
Well, I remember at a New England Folk Festival Sunday workshop one time, Louise Winston, who was very big in the CBS.
I remember Louise, yeah.
She got up to teach a dance, and she got us in the three couple sets, basically. And she said, you go up a double. And everybody stood there. And she said, you know, you go up a double. But she
couldn't teach it. Yeah, yeah. That's just
going
back.
Yeah, it's so a couple of guys, four, he bounced four, bounced back,
yeah.
Bounced four, bounced back.
Yeah.
And they said, then you sit and turn single. And nobody did anything. You know, sit and turn single.
Yeah.
And I always thought, golly. But she was administrative more than a teacher anyway.
Well, I see this in folk dancing or English dancing or concert dancing even in here. If you have a group of people who can dance, then you look good.
Yeah.
But the minute you got to teach, that's where it changes. And Dick Ledger has been and probably is still one of the best teachers that ever walked. And he always made it so much fun, but he's a superb teacher.
Sure.
And most of the people on that list that I know were all good teachers.
Right.
But again, when someone sees you working, it's like at that festival when I did what I did, and Clint McLean said, how do you do that?
Yeah.
Certain other callers who will not be mentioned will be writing down what I called, not how I did it.
Yeah.
And then they go out and bomb.
Right.
But Clint was smart. He was perceptive, and he used it in his calling techniques, which made him smooth. You know, and I don't know how far he went with it, but he saw it. He could actually see it.
Yeah.
And was smart enough to write it down. You know, and I remember he was quite disappointed at the trend in square dancing where it was going. You know, and then I know he kind of almost got out of it, but he was busy with his business. I mean, you know, he's married, isn't he? I don't remember now. I haven't seen him in a while.
Yeah, right.
You know, but I used to get glasses from him, and he'd give a discount off if you were.
Yeah, he did get married and settle down a little bit.
You know,
and he wanted to get out of it for a while. Ed Ruddy said he's starting to get back in again.
Yeah, wow. Well, and I saw his brother doing the tomahawk thing.
Oh yeah. Yeah, they're both good callers.
Yeah, it turns out his brother. Works with my daughter-in-law.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, over in...
This is Rusty McLean.
Yeah, Rusty, and she got the job there, and I don't know. Her name is Donna Hendricks.
Yeah.
She's married to my eldest son also. And I guess Rusty said, you know Chip Hendrickson. And she says, yeah, she's my father-in-law.
Yeah,
right. She says, yes, really. I'm not kidding, you know. And he was quite surprised, you know. And
right.
So forth and so on, you know, and then I hadn't seen him in ages, and the next time I saw him, I was going to one night stand in the same school he was in Brookfield, at Wiskanere School, and I had this huge gym full of fathers and daughters, and he was up in the cafeteria with his two squares doing, I figured they were an advanced level club because of what he, I mean, he was just going on and on, and they were doing umpteen million things I never heard of, you know, but they seemed to know what they were doing, but, and they were having a good time, but I don't, I see dancing differently, and having seen complicated English dance and complicated French dance, you can have complicated dance and still dance to music.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But it's a concept. I don't know. Like you said, and like several have said, training, changing the present dancers isn't going to be possible.
Right.
You're going to have to start over, and some of them will get into it. Some of the old-timers would come back if they knew about it. But I mean, if I had a dollar for every ex-club dancer, I could buy a new house and retire.
Right, me too.
You know it. Yeah. And they're gone.
That's right.
And it's, you know, it's the history of dance. And you had a Dance A While book? That one they put, that manual Dance A While.
Yes,
it's been through several.
Yeah.
That's a good book.
Yeah.
That's a real serious good book.
So. Well, Chip, I'm going to head off from Rhode Island.
Yeah.
Appreciate you taking the time.
I'm glad I could do it.
And it's a very interesting conversation we've had. I look forward to seeing you around here and there.
Huh? I'll be around.
Very good.
You never know where we're going to show up.
Okay. Thanks, Tim.